I'm in the company of a gentleman who I have admired for some time. I'm actually sitting on his garden, so the sound that you will hear in the background is a little bit people and a little bit music and the sound of water. Joe Perkins, you are very welcome to the Sideshow.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
We've got to do an intro jingle, but this series of episodes is with thanks to CD Stone, Giles and Paula and the crew in there. And Howard, I should add, well, there's a long list of them. Let's do the music thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
Joe, for those who don't know you, what are you? It's a ridiculous question, I know, but what do you do for a living?
Well, I've been a gardener and a landscaper and a landscape architect and a garden designer since I left college. So I've got more than 20 years of doing all of it, really. But this is the first time I put my name to a garden at Chelsea, but I've built for other people at Chelsea for the last 12 years.
Is that sort of the shimmy from, to put a term on it, contractor to designer, to be somewhat biblical?
Actually, I think it, you know, I mean, the thing about this garden particularly is that it was a pleasure to build, and everybody who's been involved with it has found it a pleasure to build. And I think part of the reason for that is working with a team of guys that I know really well. And that I've worked with for many years, and that's one of the advantages of having been a contractor. So I don't see it as a shift from one to another. I see it as a continuation of what I've always been doing.
Well, you're talking to a guy who's made the shift and still does the contractor bit at the same token. But I've had this conversation with, in particular, of recent, you listeners at home would know this, with Ed Burnham, where we have to fill in the form for the Royal Horticultural Society, and there's a board at the garden, and so you end up being, I suppose, in, shall I say it, media terms, being labelled as one. I guess I never wanted to personally design gardens until I knew that I could tell the contractor how I wanted it to be done. And when he said, no, it'd be better if we did it this way, I go, no, if we do it like this, then we get this sort of finish. And so I didn't have to wait on them to tell me how to write a love song. I said, here's how I want you to play bass guitar on it, if that makes better sense, or do the guitar solo. But we stood shoulder to shoulder. Is that a better way to put what you've sort of done, which is a lovely way of doing it?
Yeah, that is exactly right. I always thought that I need to learn how to build something before I can tell someone else how to build it. So I started off as a labourer, and I worked here, I worked in London, I worked in Spain, I worked with Romanians, Ukrainians, and the common language was Spanish, so I learned Spanish, and I can't write it, but I can speak it. And it's for me, it's all about a team. It's always about the team, and there's no less important job on site. All the jobs on site are important, so it doesn't really matter who you are. It's making the thing come together.
I spoke with Joe Thompson some time ago. You at home again would remember that as the Eye for Williams trailer session. That was with London College of Garden Design. Anyhow, I'm veering off the track, and we were talking about worst jobs. I don't mean bad jobs. I mean, I'll give you a funny one. When I was doing the worst nursery job, or the most ladronach, to put an Irish word in it, but the most boring job in the world for some, and I appreciate why, which is weeding a couple of thousand pot plants in a polythene tunnel on your knees all day for 3 months solid. And the one thing I said to the students, talking to them afterwards, was within half a day, I knew how many pots per hour took up X amount of square metres, and how long it was going to take the guy on my left to get to the end of the tunnel based on what he was doing, including taking away the now buckets of waste that had to be dumped. And so you became quite proficient in saying, he's not going to get that done today, just walking past the door. What was the worst one that you've done, if you understand me, but also sort of beneficial?
I mean, that's quite easy. The worst one I've ever done is maintenance on supermarket car parks.
Oh, gosh.
Because you find all kinds of stuff in the undergrowth that you don't want to hit with a strimmer. So that was a job that I transferred away from quite quickly. And if that's what you do, then hats off to you, because it's a tough job to do, and you don't get much appreciation for it.
Has that turned you off Berberis and and Viburnum for the rest of your life?
Actually, funnily enough, I like some of my favourite plants. I've got a berberis in my garden, and it always amazes me the vivid shade of purple that it goes every year. So, no.
Take me to the garden that you've done now and give me the background on it if you can. I always remember my mom looking at Chelsea on TV and saying, oh my God, it's amazing. And whether you've done a garden at Tatton or as a young designer, when I speak to those guys or the guys here, it's the same journey, but there's a couple of extra zeros at the end of it. It's all irrelevant, and the pressure sort of steps up a gear, maybe in particular when your own name is at the top of the page. But you don't just walk into a Tesco frozen food section and go, oh, how you doing, my name's Joe, and they go, oh, I'm from X and Y, can I give you a big fat check to build checks, I say, for use of the noughties. You wouldn't remember those pieces of paper with letters on them that were worth money. If you understand me, there's a longer process to it for the greater part.
Yeah, I mean, this is a garden that I wanted to build for a long time. It's very briefly inspired by the Basque landscape, northern Spain. So we've got these dramatic sort of rock formations in the garden. It's where my wife's family's from, so we go there. I go there with my kids on holiday every year. So that's the personal inspiration behind the garden. The journey for me started when I approached Facebook in 2017 and had the garden accepted for the show last year. Unfortunately, things can move, you know, things move, but they move slowly, and I didn't get the sponsorship in time. So I've had a lot of time to consider every single element in this garden, and I'm really pleased that it's here now. But a lot of that journey has involved sourcing all the materials and plants for the show. And yeah, one of the things, I think possibly, I mean, there's things I love about the plants and every single element, but the stone is really important. And it was a battle to find the right type of stone. And I lucked out really by talking to Giles at CED, who obviously knows everything. Well, I don't know if he knows everything there is to know about stone, but he knows a lot about it. And he said, right, you need to go up to Caithness in far northeast Scotland, and you need to come and see this stone that comes out of the ground in these enormous pieces. It's hugely strong. And, you know, if you want to get some of the drama of the Basque coastline with the huge cliffs, you need to use big bits of stone. So that's what we did. And I think I made him go up to Scotland 3 times. I think he was cursing me on a relatively tight budget that he'd agreed to, but he did go, and we spent days in the quarry in the driving rain looking out at the Orkney Islands, because it's right on the coast and it's a tough place to work. But the stone is beautiful, and it doesn't actually almost matter what you do with it, it's still beautiful. But it's all natural edges, and the huge path slabs we've got, there's a 9 meter long path, but it's made of 3 slabs about a ton and a half each, and they've got a beautiful natural edge on them because there's lines of calcite that run through the quarry, which meant that we could select these straightest seams of calcite and split the stones down those seams to get our straight path, but with a natural edge.
I'll get back to the stone and the makeup of the garden in just a minute, but you said you got in touch with Facebook. You can't just send them a private message and go, hey, I don't even know how that works, and I know the Sideshow has a Facebook page, but that's about pretty much the height of it. So I'll go back and say it. There has to be even if you do take somebody like Giles or...
We wrap up soon, so we've got the BBC waiting to come and
sell photos now. Do I have to get off? Does Joe have to get off, or can he stay?
Joe's got to get
off. Oh, okay.
Off.
Yeah, that's no problem. No problem at all. This isn't the first time this has happened, so I'll stand off Joe's garden. I think this happened with Sherry Carman, funnily enough, in Hampton Court in 2016, and the BBC threw us off her garden. I think she tried to defend herself, but it wasn't happening, so we'll put this on pause, and we'll come back to you just after this.
Cut it or anything?
No, leave it all in. Leave it all in. It's real. Don't get me wrong. I've got a £200 microphone on Yeah, you have to be realistic about things. You don't pretend to be something you're not. We moved across from Joe's garden onto the far side. Yeah, we were at the point of messaging Facebook. And then I commented that you listening at home in real time will understand where we were. I know that for my sake more so than Joe's. He's far more intelligent than I am. Even having somebody like Giles, not to overly big him up too much and always involved in this process or why these interviews are happening. You don't just ring again another stone company and say, I want to go up to Scotland. It's like a Jerry Maguire thing. You need the great people or the good people and the best of not just business but friends as well by your side to what you were saying about inverted commas contractor /designer. It goes back to that. You need the greats by your side.
Yeah, you need a good network of people, and it's all about talking to people and you know, sharing knowledge, isn't it? It's about being prepared to help one another and to get the best result. And you know, the people who are successful or who manage to do that are the people who are willing to collaborate and are willing to go out of their way to really put their all into it. And you know, without you know, sort of saying to you know, overdoing it really. I think if we hadn't found that stone, the garden wouldn't actually be what it is. So
sidetrack me back, because my head's going around circles now, to the sending Facebook the message thing.
Okay. Yeah, it was literally, it's an email. Email and trying to get in contact. Eventually it must have got through, because the comms chief came back and said, actually, you know what? We are interested in doing this. It's not something that we would have thought of before. And I guess they just like the idea. I don't know. It was persistence. I know a couple of guys who do work for big corporations. I know someone who works at IKEA. And I said to him, look, I'm becoming a real pain in the ass because I'm messaging these guys every day. You know, and I've been to lots of other companies, many, many other charities. I knew the garden that I wanted to build. I just needed to find someone who would sponsor it and who would make, you know, who could make a good story out of it for themselves. And so I did. I badgered them for I don't know, 18 months more maybe. It's been a long time to get to this point, but they were enthusiastic about it, and they were the ones who got on board. You know,
I don't want to invent poetry, as in I think the usual questions that I got for some gardens I have designed were, what was the inspiration for your garden, what's the theme of the garden, what were you thinking when you chose the planting? And invariably my head wanted to say, and did say, I just thought it looked good together, or I knew when I closed my eyes it was, you know, yellow bounces off black, and that's why I like rudbeckias, and there's no fact that it's stilbies or whatever it might be go at the back of that. Sometimes you just know in your head it's going to be an Otis Redding. But when you piece together the sound of the water in your garden, was it one of them where, I think when people see the photographs of your garden, Tim Howell is out there, he'll have a batch of them flowing around, I know. We're both smiling now. It's the only thing I know, if you picture a waterfall, people can see the water trailing down, it's going to cascade off a few rocks, you have a rough idea what it's going to be. But your one is one of the first times, I think Kate Goals in 17, I think it was, it was like seeing a woman on the far side of the bar. I literally, I know you know that one at home, but I literally had to double back and go, how did she do that?
Yeah.
And in your one, it's maybe the third time in 5 years where I've doubled back and went, that's different. But then when you hear the story of the stone, and then you realise the role the stone plays in creating that sound, the reason why the sideshow and the little people in my head sort of combined together is because I get to ask the questions of what was he thinking. But I don't want to invent poetry. Does that all make mm-hmm. sense with you?
Yeah. So it's the
sorry, it's literally the photo call now, so we'll have to come take you, Joe.
All right, that's it.
I'd like to answer that question, so if you'll stay hanging around, then I'll come back and answer it.
Excellent. Okay. Thanks, Joe.
Sorry, we've got a 1 hour allocation,
This is, I can't remember the last time I did something like this. I think I was No, we were trying to do part two of the end of the RHS Cardiff one with Ed Burnham, and we forgot, which is the same as the part one before we actually went there. But it's day two of Chelsea, and I'm back in the company of Joe Perkins. Joe, how are you?
I don't know how I am. I'm really happy.
Things have changed since yesterday. I always find press day is very easy to do interviews with people because they don't know what medals they've got, and that's why I sort of love it, because they don't base the interviews on any of that stuff. But you've done extremely well, I'm delighted to say.
I'm not going to credit myself. It's down to an amazing team of people, but we have managed to get gold, best in category and best construction. So I've had the pleasure of Sue Biggs and all the rest of it. You know, I'm really happy, really, really happy. I may not sound it, but that's because I can't quite believe it.
Have you got burnt out yet? And that comes from a
Chelsea crash.
Is there a term on it?
No, not yet. Not yet. I've still got a lot of stuff to do, and my wife's here, and she's brought some champagne, so I've had some of that. And I've got my family here today as well, so it's a really good day. It's a really good day.
I don't remember where we were in yesterday's interview, which was a two-parter.
Neither do I, but we can just see where it goes. Yeah.
I don't think there's any other broadcast would ever do it in this style. Again, I'm very grateful, and to CD Stone, whose name we have already mentioned. Of all things for me to do when I got home last night, I saw it on the BBC, and little people in my head vilified themselves when they concentrated on the water showing.
They love the water, and of course, you know, everybody loves the water. The interesting thing that I found last night, and again today, is because I've got the sound of the beach, because Bamber Wallace has managed to do such a great job on the wave machine, that it's so realistic or so naturalistic that it transports people to their own beach. So I've had people say to me, it reminds me of Jamaica, or it reminds me of Scotland, or it reminds me of Wales. And it means different things to different people, because it depends where your coast is, and it becomes a personal thing. And that's an amazing thing that maybe that's something maybe to do with the senses of sound and possibly smell. They have the ability to transport you to, you know, a favourite memory or whatever it is, and it's really interesting and quite touching that has that effect on people.
We were talking on the way up here about show gardening, the bit behind the scenes, the bit that the bit behind the circus, shall I put a term on it, living together, experiences that we both have had with large teams and more than one person required, obviously, to piece the garden together, and what goes into it, and your general thoughts were, wouldn't it be sort of nice if that was exposed is the wrong word, but shown a little bit how much time has gone into piecing this one together. How many people, or have you lost count at this stage of the game, were involved?
I can't remember how many people are involved overall, but you know, if you count all the amazing and knowledgeable suppliers that I've had the privilege of working with, whether it's, you know, Kelways or Deepdale or CED or Ashfold Timber, or you know, so many of them, we're running into 50-60 people. But the point about it is that none of this would happen without this team of people, and nobody has enough knowledge to be able to pull this off on your own, never mind the sort of physical endurance that it takes to do it. And it would be interesting, I think, well, it would certainly be interesting to me, I don't know about the general public, but I think they would be interested in seeing how these things actually come together, and seeing that all the you know, all the heartache and the stress and everything else that happens, because that makes them appreciate what they're looking at.
I remember last year, I can't remember who it was. Tim Howell is out there. He'll probably correct me on this one or be able to inform me better of who it was. But one of the questions I said was, as a first-timer, no reflection on you, is your bow, your next, are they tired and sick to the death at the point of saying, if you tell me one more time about this garden, I'm going to throw you off a small trampoline, or gently put custard in your socks or something that maybe irates you slightly.
I've got an amazing wife, Natalia. She has her birthday 13th of May. I have not been around for her birthday for the last 12 years because I've always been here. So I think actually one big birthday she had, we did do something. But she's, you know, she's amazing. And I think everybody obviously misses their family when they're away. It's a difficult thing. It's difficult for the people that are left at home, especially if you've got kids or whatever it is. So they deserve a mention as much as all the guys and girls that go into actually building the gardens. And also, I should mention, because I've had a fantastic team, I should mention the amazing volunteers that I've had, most of them from London College Garden Design.
Good old Andrew.
I need to give him a mention because I had a fantastic team of volunteers doing the planting. They were so enthusiastic. They didn't even moan about picking out. They were made to sort through different bags of quarry waste to pick out different size stones to do the dressing, and they didn't moan about that. And they're so proud of what they've done. So
that sounds like a silly job. Somebody has to do it.
Yeah.
Again, this is repeat conversation with any designer that I've ever spoke to. Sorry, I've got an itchy eye syndrome now. But when you're on the same page, when you've got the right team by your side, it doesn't matter whether you're the designer or you're Pope Francis. Somebody's got to sort through the pebbles and find the right one. Somebody's got to get those plants down in between their kneecaps and cut all those tiny little bits of what might be critiqued out of it.
No, that's absolutely right. I've said to my volunteers before they started, I said, it doesn't matter, you will be doing everything. You know, and there is no job that is less important than another job. And I'm quite happy to do the washing up and make them cups of tea and do whatever is required. So nobody should be too proud to do any job because it's all equally important. And if the small jobs don't get done, then nothing else gets done.
It's only when you stand back and you take a look at the garden and you see the detail going into it, because you're planting at the front and your stonework was a little bit... to the punter at home, maybe, no disrespect to you listening, rugged, and then you hit the water and all of a sudden that's the bit that people tend to find soothing. I don't want to speak on your behalf. I feel like a Sky Sports commentator now. In the final third, you get to the third if you're from London, or third if you're from Ireland. There you go, clarification. How do I ask it? How difficult was it to get the bit that you wanted to not look pristine and perfect, right, bearing in mind what you've just alluded to?
It was extremely difficult. That was the bit that took the longest. I had Alison Hamilton, who has worked on many show gardens, Menodges among them.
Yeah.
And she and Pippa Martlew were in charge of my planting, and they did a fantastic job. But Alison spent almost all week on that front part, and it was, you know, is this right, does it look natural enough, is it sparse enough, have we got the right varieties in there, and it was key really to telling the story, because the thing about it is that the public look, we wanted to draw your eye into the garden, and so the front of the garden is all about the foreshore planting, and it has to be sparse and it has to say coastal, and you have to be in no doubt of what the garden is about. And then they see the wave behind that, and they're reading that, and of course that then the sound of that then says coastal. So you reinforce this coastal theme immediately before they even get drawn to the back, where, you know, there's much more sort of crowd pleasing planting.
Oh, Jesus, that's better. Okay, one sec. And we're on these chairs, and I have to lean at a slight angle, and now I'm feeling like an elf, to quote my dad. And Joe's phone was hopping. So it's all going on around us. We're actually in the exhibitors area at the very back of Chelsea, and I can see John Wire there, and I think Anne-Marie Powell, and there's a few other former guests of the show sitting behind them. A room full of famous people, and they've got me to thank, which they don't. I haven't got a Christmas card off one of them this year, but Joe's going to send me one. And where were we? Oh yeah, on the garden. So the only bit that I not queried for a negative, but queried, because the wood was, let's call it reclaimed wood or aged.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you need cash facilities, there's an ATM machine just inside the ballroom gate entrance and at the northern end of Eastern End.
Well, there you go. If you need an ATM, you know where to go, folks. But it was the point at which you took something that was rugged, stone, planting, sparse, water, wave machine, sound of that, to rugged looking timber again, and then the canopy drapes over the back of it, which is, or you could have had 50 or 20 different alternates to what should go in there. That's the only bit that I'm not saying it didn't look out of place, I'm saying it's the bit that maybe caught my eye and made me go, how come you chose that one?
Okay, that's a copper canopy. It's made from a fine copper mesh. You're absolutely right, it's an abstract shape of a wave. It shines, it's almost luminescent in the sunlight. We've lit it up at night so that it glows. it's there for shade, but obviously copper as a material, as a conductor, it's if you like, it's the kind of industrial heritage of technology. That's what it represents. And the reason that I've gone quite contemporary and quite finished with it, because it's an architectural mesh. It's used in false ceilings for restaurant fit-outs and stuff like that. But the reason that it is quite contemporary is because that is the one element where we're highlighting the idea of technology within the garden. And the rest of the garden is all about naturalness, natural edges, you know, rugged and coastal sort of character. And the reason for that is because I wanted to emphasize the physical things that happen in our communities as a result of people being able to communicate and come together on Facebook. So it was a very conscious decision to make a low-tech garden, but that's the one element that is shining through as, you know, this is about communication and technology.
I spoke to Matt Kightley and Joe Thompson, previous episode, folks, if you're listening, about standing out into the crowd and just mingling amongst them and hearing the feedback from them. Never mind the judges' feedback, just for the minute. We'll get to that in a while. Have you done that? Have you heard any what a comedian might call a mild heckle?
No, I haven't. Actually, I've had one. I've had one famous actor, which I will remain nameless, who went past last night, and I think one of the crew said, "Would you like some information on the garden?" And he looked at it and said, "The Facebook garden? No, I wouldn't. Thank you very much." And off he went. So, you know, those are people's views. That's fine, and they're entitled to them. But I think if I can try and explain the story behind the garden and the personal inspiration for the garden, which, you know, is a very personal landscape for me, then people become engaged with it, and they genuinely really like it.
What was the judge's feedback on the garden? Are you allowed to say, ooh, magic sheet of paper? Have you got ambition, Joe? Have you got ambition?
I've got... I'm just really lucky. I've got...
You've got ambition, Joe. I'm delighted to hear that.
I managed to get excellent for everything apart from client's brief, which is very good, and a bit on planting density, which was very good. So I dropped a couple of points, but I'm really, really pleased.
I've used this in one other interview beforehand, but something Ed Burnham said to me when we spoke about working on extremely tight budgets with a sponsor over the door, and irrespective of medal or judges' feedback or what that might be, Ed's note was, well, he referred to me as hombre, and he said, "We did the right things by the right people. Don't worry, buddy. Got your back." And I thought, now I feel all a little bit emotional. I'm getting Jerry Maguire gulps in my throat. But I take the point that he was saying, when you surround yourself with the best, when you've all got the same mission in mind, only the best will do. And even though you don't get there, you tried as damned as you could. But at times you got to turn around and say, we don't have the budget that Manchester City does. Albeit we made the FA Cup final, there was no way we could compete with that. One, in your case, albeit there was gold, do you turn around at the end of all of this journey and say, yeah, boy, done good? I was the conductor, my apologies, of an orchestra, and collectively or on their behalf, albeit I take the bow on the top of the stage in front of them, with them behind me, you done good and you did it all as best you could.
It's all about the team, isn't it? If that's what you're asking, it's... Yeah. You know, the first thing I did when I got the award was text everybody involved, so... I get a bit emotional about it, but you know, everybody who's been involved with the garden is so proud of it, and there's some of the guys that I've worked with for years, you know, 15 years or more, who we've talked about doing garden together for ourselves, you know, because with my contractor's hat on, you know, we've talked about doing something together for ourselves, and it's really nice to have done it and to get this result, and they're all so pleased.
Joe Perkins, thank you so much. Been a real pleasure. I know it's been done over a 2-day period, and thanks to you at home for your patience. Maybe I hope it's come across okay, and also to see the Natural Stone being superb, really, in making this series of episodes possible, and you also for listening. Congratulations, Joe. have a great week, and I'll see you later for a pint of Guinness.
Pleasure talking to you. Thank you. Thanks.
James, how are you?